episode 636 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Superman Sunday episode, and today Adam from Talking Superman and I are going to be talking about Superman number 6 from a creative team of Brian Michael Bendis. We have Yvonne Reese on pencils, Joe Prado, and Eau Claire Albert on inks. We've got Alex Sinclair handling the letters, handling the colors, rather, and Josh Reed handling the letters. So, well, let's just start with our overall impressions. What was your overall impression of this issue, Adam?
My overall impression was it was, you know, we knew that this big fight was coming, but I thought they were just going to go with all-out brawl, and my overall impression was this was a more emotional issue than I thought it would be.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, and they really, for this fight, did something unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't expect it. So, not to keep you all in too much suspense here, it was a series of splash pages from Yvonne Reese, rather than, you know, having it be traditional panel after panel. Or so I thought that made it interesting. And then the dialogue is basically just little paragraphs kind of placed around the image where it didn't really impact the art as much. So it made kind of for an interesting reading experience. I'm still unsure if I like it, if that makes sense. It's one of those things where, you know, I've read it a couple times, but I need more time to just kind of have it in the back of my mind and look at it, come back and look at it a few, you know, days later, and maybe I'll be able to make a decision on it. Because there's part of me that's like, eh. But that also could be because it's just non-traditional, and I'm such a traditionalist when it comes to comics, you know. Like, was this the best way to tell the story? I don't know.
You mean specifically for putting the paragraphs to the side, or just the whole ensemble?
Yeah, just the whole fact that it's a series of splash pages. I mean, it's not the first time that we've seen this kind of story technique. Like, I'm thinking specifically of the recent Action Comics 1000 and the Patrick Gleason story, the one where Vandal Savage sends Superman kind of through time, or at least in his mind, he's traveling through different eras, and it's just, you know, it's a series of splash pages. And I think there it worked very well, because basically each era, Gleason was changing his style a little bit to kind of suit that era. So I think in that, it worked well, but it kind of had a specific story reason why you would want to do a series of splash pages, because he was flipping through time and each splash page was a different era. Here, you're telling a much smaller story in a way, because really this fight takes place. It's one of the things that Superman talks about during the fight. It takes place over a much shorter period of time. You know, he's talking about speed, and between Zar and General Zod and Superman himself, they can all move at incredible speeds, which means his decision making and the actual fight takes place over a much shorter period of time. So I suppose when you think of it in that context, it makes sense to break it down like this, because really, if you're doing it in traditional comic book time and panels, then the fight's only a page long, right? Because when you look at the rest of the issue, where it gets a little more traditionally laid out with panels, you know, that's quite a bit of time. And again, it's broken down into panels as we see Superman kind of flying around the world, taking care of some of the fallout from the Earth being in the Phantom Zone. So if you moved it along at the same pace in terms of this fight took a few seconds, you're probably only talking about a couple panels. So I suppose in that way it makes sense. The story itself, I don't know. It didn't exactly turn out the way I wanted. I'll say it that way, but it did turn out as Bendis did what I expected him to do. I'll put it that way. So,
well, by the way, I was going to say the splash pages reminded me of Superman's fight with Doomsday.
Okay.
In the way they, and I think for the same reason as they, at that point, right, they said they wanted to up the speed of it and the intensity. And I think it was the same, it was, you know, obviously trying to do the same thing here. And I guess I you know, let's not get too ahead, but I guess I liked the story more than you did. I didn't see anything coming.
Yeah, and you know, when as I'm flipping through these splash pages, it is great artwork. You know, we have to give Yvonne Rees and Prado and Albert, you know, credit, and Alex Sinclair, because it's beautiful artwork. And I think as much as they wanted to slow down this fight that takes place over just a few seconds, the reason Bendis did it this way is really to showcase the art. I saw him talking on social media about, Yvonne Rees' art is incredible, and he wanted to be able to do something like this. So there are some aspects of it that, you know, some specific story beats that work better than others in my mind. But what's interesting is, so I think the first page works really well, and that actually has panels on it as I'm looking. So let's dive into the issue, and then we can talk about some more of our thoughts on it. That first page starts with Superman. He narrates this issue, and we see over a series of five panels Zod's fist coming in at an incredible speed to punch Zar. And while that's happening, Superman is talking about Lois being on a plane, half asleep, half listening to a movie, and hearing this idea that somebody who has the ability to move at the speed Superman moves at makes a big sacrifice in order to be to live a life with a quote-unquote normal person, because they're having to force themselves to slow down. And Superman basically says that he reassures her that that's not the case. It's not effort for him to slow down and live with, you know, at a normal pace with a normal person. It's actually effort to be at speed, you know, to be at that speed. And the reason he's talking about this is because, like we were just saying, the ability of Zar and the ability of General Zod and Superman himself to move at these incredible speeds means a fight like they're about to have in the Phantom Zone moves at an incredible speed. And so the dilemma that Superman's faced with about how to deal with Zod attacking Zar is a decision he has to make quickly. He has to analyze everything, the morality of it. And I don't know that we really get a definite answer onto what he would do because of what happens toward the end of the fight. So anyway, when we turn the page, the first splash page, we see the three of them fighting, and it almost looks like as Superman is attacking Zar, he's also trying to hold Zod back, and he's thinking about, should I let this happen? Basically, that's his dilemma, right? Zod is there to get revenge in a way, or retribution, or justice. And, you know, Superman is definitely about justice. Does Zod deserve to die for what he's done? Superman also wonders, well, how did Zod even find out? Which we, you know, Adam and I speculated about last time we talked about Superman. Like, wait, how does he know about Zar now? Like, what happened that showed him, oh, I need to go to the Phantom? We know he had that vision, but yes, not only did he somehow discover the existence of Zar suddenly, because we know Zar's been around for many, many years, if he was there at the destruction of Krypton. So, but all of a sudden, Zod has that knowledge now. Not only that knowledge, he knew that he was in the Phantom Zone and went and attacked. So Superman is thinking, so once and for all, how far can I take this fight without betraying my entire life's work, right? Or do I just let Zod do it? And if I just stand by and let Zod do it, then is that me condoning it, right? And so, he's thinking all these thoughts in his mind. He's very conflicted. You know, every day I desperately try to live up to what everybody else thinks I should be, but I'm not a child. at some point there are things about me that people don't understand, and if Zod has his way, I have just seconds to find out my connection, my father's connection to this, because that's the other aspect of it, right? Like, Superman knows that his father just survived the destruction of Krypton. How did that happen? What's Zar's connection to it? Did he actually do it? What does he know? Superman wants those answers, because if he's going to let Zod take out Zar, then he may never have those answers. So again, he's got just such a short period of time to try to understand Rogel Zar. Why did he do this? Why does he hate Krypton? I mean, there are so many questions that we haven't gotten the answers to yet. Superman hasn't gotten the answers to yet. So one aspect of this fight, beyond that confliction that Superman feels, is also we saw at the end, or in the middle, toward the end of issue 5, there was that moment where Superman, kind of a light bulb moment, it seemed like, where all of a sudden he understood Zar. And now it seems like we've gone back from that. I was like, wait, where was that? It seemed like, you remember that moment, Adam, where he was like, I get you now.
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah, we didn't really get that yet.
We didn't find out what that was, because Zod showed up and all hell broke loose. So ultimately, Superman decides to do something, and it's almost like he doesn't even make a self-aware decision, because he says there is one aspect of this fight, because Superman is wondering too, how did Zod find out? How did he just show up? How did he know where we are? And there is something that Zod doesn't seem to know yet. But Superman, on a subconscious level, makes the decision that Zod does need to know. And toward the end of Superman's part of the fight, he kind of flies back in at speed and gives an incredible punch to Zar, which is it's a really awesome image. With Zod, you can even see him in the background, surprised by it. So I would take it to mean that he didn't know about this. And what Superman's battle cry is at that moment is for Kandor. Because at that moment, Zod realizes that, yes, Zar has destroyed, in a way, the last remnants of Krypton and any chance they had to have a new Krypton by finding a way to restore that capital city. And on the next page, we get this picture of Zar, bloody, bleeding, but in no way defeated. And now that Superman has basically bestowed this knowledge on Zod, what does that mean for the fight? What does that mean for Superman in terms of, all right, well, now if Zod was mad before, now he's going to be even more determined. And so at that moment, I'm thinking, wow, so is that Superman making a decision that, all right, this guy needs to go down? So we turn the page for the fight to continue. And instead of the fight continuing, we get Superman in Star Labs, the Atom in the background having used the Phantom Zone projector to pull Superman out of the Phantom Zone and back to Earth. Adam Strange is there as well. Superman's not real happy to have been pulled out of the fight. And the scientist that was in charge of the experiment explains to Superman that the same technology and experimental procedure that accidentally sent the Earth into the Phantom Zone was what they basically, they were trying to map the Phantom Zone. Well, they used that same kind of procedure, and they were able to pinpoint Superman and pull him out of the Phantom Zone. And Superman's like, well, that's great, but now you got to send me back. And Adam Strange is like, wait, what? Why would you want to go back? And he says something important is going on in the Phantom Zone. And Adam Strange is like, well, what's that? And the Atom says, Zod. Yes, Zod and Rogel Zar. And Adam Strange is like, but the Earth needs you. Like, you know, the bad guys are in prison. They're in jail. They're where they're supposed to be. You know, we need you here. And as kind of illustrate that point, we get John Jones, the Martian Manhunter, saying, has anyone heard from Superman? We really need him on the San Andreas Fault. There's immediate danger from the aftershocks of the Phantom Zone event. And so again, Adam Strange says, you know, the bad guys are in the Phantom Zone and you're needed here. And it kind of wakes Superman up. He says, you know what? You're right, of course. And Adam Strange says, it's been a long day. Superman says, but Rogel's are, and you know, you can just tell by the look on his face, those two panels where he says, but Rogel's are, and the panel immediately following it, you can tell the kind of the anguish on his face. He wants those answers. He needs to understand. And I think that in that way, it's making him a couple things. It's very relatable. Can kind of understand why he would feel that. I think any of us in that situation would want answers. We as readers want answers. And it also, it really shows that in his own way, he's on a quest for the truth, just like Supergirl is. So, but he knows he is needed on Earth. So he flies off and we get one final scene of Adam Strange at Star Labs saying, Rogel Czar. Blank, like bleep, some kind of expletive. And I think that's thrown in there by Bendis to kind of let us know that there are more people that knew about Czar than maybe we thought. Seems like Adam Strange has some knowledge of Rogel Czar, probably from just being out in space so often. Meanwhile, in the Phantom Zone, the fight continues between Czar and Zod, with the denizens of the zone chanting, Czar, Czar, Czar. And Zod is ultimately defeated. And as the inhabitants of the zone continue to chant Czar's name, he says, no, not me, we. My strength is yours. Your strength is mine. We together. And they start chanting we together as Zod is dragged behind Rogel Czar as he walks away. And by no means is this over by any stretch of the imagination. I imagine their Czar's not going to stop until he finds a way to escape the Phantom Zone and attack Superman again. Is that the story that happens next? I don't know. I think maybe not. I think maybe we're finally going to get a break from Czar. Meanwhile, back on Earth, Superman is talking about how the sun feels unbelievable. You know, it's been quite a while since his cells have been charged with solar energy. But with his head clear from the battle, with some distance, some perspective, all he can think of is his father, right? He didn't get the answers he wanted from Czar. And the obvious answer might be that he needs to talk to his father because his father has the answers. His father probably knows who Rogel Czar is. He knows what Czar was doing, why he hates Krypton. And his father also knows where John is. And he starts to think, well, my father knows a lot more. And then he stops like midair as he's flying because he has sensed something behind him. And he checks immediately with his X-ray vision. He listens to the specific sounds of the body because he knows those sounds better than he knows his own. It's not a shapeshifter. It's not a trick. And as he turns around, he sees it's his son. It's John. John's returned to Earth. And John says, hi, Dad. Don't freak out. And we get next Superboy returns. So as I said, I don't think that we're going to get any more Rogel Czar, at least for an issue or two. So when I say this issue and the whole Rogel Czar storyline turned out as I expected, what I meant by that is we didn't get the answers from Bendis. You know, he's going to drag it out more because that's what Bendis does. And it can be annoying at times. It's one of the reasons that a lot of people only read Bendis in trade because sometimes he takes so long to get to the point. I think that it's a good story. The Rogel Czar, I've really come around to not necessarily liking him as a character, because I think that we still need to know more about his motivation so that he can be more relatable and more layered and more complex, and we can understand him a little better. And he can be a villain that can be everlasting, you know, or at least longer lasting. At least somebody that when he comes around, it's interesting. I think on some level, it's still, it's not interesting yet because he's still a mustache twirler. He's still just somebody to fight. You know, I think Adam and I have talked before and agree that's kind of the problem with Doomsday. He's just kind of this mindless engine of destruction. And it, so he, and because of what Doomsday's origin is, he's never going to have those kind of layers and motivation. He's built to destroy. And that's, I mean, there, what's the, yeah, it makes him formidable in terms of being a challenge for Superman physically, but anything beyond that intellectually, it's just not there. So in a way, if they do it right, Rogel Czar could be what Doomsday maybe should have been, which is a match in terms of physical power to Superman, but also on, you know, an emotional level or an intellectual level. But we haven't gotten there yet. And I'm glad that we're not – hope that I think we're going to be done with Rogel Czar for a while, because if Bendis is not ready to give us the answers, then we need to move on and stop dragging it out, so to speak. So – I mean, this is Unity Part 6, so I imagine this is the, you know, as I said, the final piece of this story, because that's the perfect amount for a trade.
Mm-hmm.
Superman wanting the answers from his dad, I totally get that, and that relationship is one that I think needs to be explored more, you know, because that was Dan Jurgens that brought Jor-El back. It wasn't a Bendis thing, but it's a thread that he's continuing to kind of follow, as opposed to a lot of other things where he's changed. And we can talk specifically about the last page here. One of the things he's changed is Superboy. It looks like he left and he was 10 years old, maybe 11. And he comes back and he looks, what, 16, 17, 15 at the youngest. I mean, he left a boy and it looks like he came back a young man. And I don't know in terms of story how long he's supposed to have been gone, but couldn't have been more than a few months. So I guess Bendis decided that he didn't really have any stories for a boy, and he wants to do more of a young Superman kind of stories. I have mixed feelings about this. I would like to read stories about a young Superman, a young Superboy. But I also was happy reading the stories. I liked where John was. I liked him as a character, as a young boy. I think there was a lot more that still could have been explored there, especially Superman teaching him how to be a hero, how to grow up. And now we've skipped a lot of stuff. So I don't know. I you know, just like we've speculated on before, Bendis didn't want to tell stories about Clark and Lois being married. So he's all of a sudden changed the nature of their relationship, where they're apart more than they're together. We all know how I feel about that. We're not going to rehash that. And now, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. He's obviously has different ideas of the stories he wants to tell with Superboy than the stories of him as a boy. This is more him as, you know, on the verge of being a man, much more closer to the age of the traditional Superboy that we've seen over the past few years, whether that be Kal-El or Connor Kent or, you know, whoever. So it's going to be interesting. I would have liked a few more stories of 10-year-old John and Crypto, boy and his dog, and stuff like that. I think it was really working, but I don't write the comics. So as far as how he looks, I do like the costume, and he does look like a young Clark. So hopefully we get at least a heartfelt reunion between father and son next issue before we head down the path of, so what was he up to out there? So I am excited to see that. What are your thoughts on Superman's return, Adam? Or Superboy, rather?
Well, I think that it's not so much that Bendis says, like, I don't want to explore this as a kid. I think he thinks the exploration is in the growing up. And it's not like it's over for John and Clark, you know. exchanging lessons and growing up together. It's that this is a big part of that whole experience of growing up and raising a son.
Yeah, but don't you think he missed? I mean, again, we don't know the age based on what we're seeing here, but it does seem like all of a sudden he's missed a big chunk of the growing up.
Well, I think the point is like that happens. Like that is going to affect their relationship emotionally, and that's part of the father-son dynamic. You know, it's not getting rid of it, it's exploring it from a new angle.
So what you're saying is now all of a sudden John's done what looks to be a few years of growing up and Clark's missed it. So now there's going to be friction there. Like, well, Grandpa
not done me
to do it this
not
way.
Not finished. Just not even quite the next stage either. It's just like what happens. It's like when you haven't seen a family member for a while and they're different, but your relationship with them doesn't change. It's just now you have, I'm having a hard time describing this, but it's a reflection of that. You know what I'm saying? It's now that we have grown separately, what do we regain when we are reunited? What happens, you know, when we try our old habits together, you know?
Yeah, I suppose there is an interesting dynamic there, but I just have a feeling because it's Bendis, it's going to more be, they're going to get confront some villain in some kind of situation, and John's going to want to handle it one way, which is more in line with things his grandfather taught him, because we know that Jor-El isn't happy that Superman is staying on Earth. He feels Earth is too primitive and the citizens there don't deserve his protection and they don't appreciate what he does for them. And so I just have a feeling it's going to be John wanting to do it one way, kind of how he was taught by his grandfather, whatever challenges they faced out in space. And Superman's going to want him to do it a different way. And it's going to be that old, new generation versus old generation kind of way of looking at things. And I mean, I hope I'm wrong because that's an old and tired story, but I could definitely see it going that way. So hopefully I'm wrong. Hopefully it doesn't go that way.
No, I think you're right. But I think what it's going to lead to is more lessons for Clark to teach his son. And we're going to get great moments from that. That's why I'm saying it's not over, that the father-son dynamic. It's going to be, John's going to have to kind of take note of what's happened and learn from his father again.
But the question being, obviously, is he going to do that or is he going to stick to what he learned out in space, where it just becomes two stubborn people who... And, obviously Superman has a reason to believe in what he's believed in because he's already gone through it, whereas John hasn't. And I guess if you want it to reflect real life, you almost have to have John be kind of stubborn and not want to take his father's advice, because I've seen that so many times in my life where you can tell somebody can be in the exact same situation that you were in, and you can tell them, man, do this, because if you go down this other, if you choose choice B, it's going to lead to a lot of pain. Believe me, I made that exact same mistake. It doesn't matter how many times you tell somebody until they make that mistake themselves and live through it. A lot of times they don't realize. They're just like, but then later they'll come back and say, you know what? You were right. I should have listened to you. But, they have to make the mistake for themselves. I mean, that's pretty common. That's human nature, I suppose, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing.
No, I agree. But I guess what I'm looking at is instead of the typical feat of strength that Superman goes through, this is going to be a feat of parenting, and I'm excited to read that.
Yeah, I agree with you to some extent. The other thing to think about is, so we saw in the Mr. Oz storyline that there was some outside influence. Like, as much as Jor-El was trying to show Superman that the citizens of Earth did not appreciate him and didn't necessarily deserve him, there was an outside influence that was acting on him that was causing him to take that to an extreme. And that was kind of the whole point of the Oz storyline.
Mm-hmm.
We know that Jor-El is free of that, but ever since he's been free of that, we haven't gotten as much of his perspective. Like, how much does he buy into that? How much was that outside influence, whatever it was, whatever that, if it was a being that was controlling him or infecting him or whatever, we just don't know, because ever since then, the only time we've seen Jor-El is when he showed up to take John on this journey. And he was very cryptic, and he still kind of seemed very much in that Mr. Oz persona. He didn't necessarily seem like he was at the end of the Oz storyline, when he kind of seemed a little more, for lack of a better term, human. He seemed to have more humanity. So I do want to know more about – so what's going on with Jor-El? What was that entity or – energy or whatever it was that was kind of pulling his strings and forcing him to cause all these natural disasters and endanger human life, because Jor-El was not that when he first came to Earth. He was much more of a Superman-like hero, and he was helping people. And, you know, he gradually over the years got more and more cynical because people came to expect the help and they didn't really appreciate it. And then it seems like his strings were being pulled by, as I said, some kind of energy or whatever it was. And so he kind of has a moment at the end of the Oz storyline with his son where they seem more on the same page. But then, as I said, when he came back in the Man of Steel miniseries, he was kind of that cold, almost like being controlled again kind of thing. So what did happen out there? Why did – I mean, Lois came back early because she said she was putting them in danger. How was she putting them in danger? Like, those are still stories that I want to know and answers I want to get. And plus, I just want to understand more about Jor-El and who he currently is. What did he teach John? I think it could be a great dynamic. Three generations of Kryptonians, all with different perspectives. You know, Superman, for his part, has a little knowledge of Krypton. John has none, obviously. He's born on Earth, only knows Earth. Plus, he's only half Kryptonian, so that brings a different perspective. And then we have the perspective of Jor-El, who saw his beloved Krypton destroyed and has been on Earth for many years and now has seen this new generation that he's taught. He obviously cares for John. He wanted him to learn more of his heritage. And, you know, if he didn't have feelings for him, if there wasn't some kind of familial connection, he wouldn't care. So I'm completely ready for some more Jor-El and to kind of understand, and hopefully him and Clark can come to some kind of understanding, because I again, it's an old story, right? Father and son, different generations, never get along, never see eye to eye, and it can be kind of boring. It's much better when they at least agree on some things. And it's okay to have, you know, different philosophies on certain things. But I don't know. I'm curious. Plus, he does have a lot of the answers about Rogul Zar, perhaps. Or maybe he doesn't know about Zar at all, and he's going to do like Zod and fly after him. So any thoughts on Jor-El specifically?
Well, I guess I'm like you. I'm just waiting for... I need to see what he was doing up there, I guess, you know? My thoughts on Jor-El in general are kind of ambivalent, honestly. I'm still not even sure about how I feel about him being back. It's just kind of... I don't think we've gotten a great story from it yet. I thought Oz Effect was all right, but didn't really hit the dynamics that I thought it would, and maybe this next one will.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. Kind of surprised as far as kind of shifting back to the fight that once Superman was pulled out of the Phantom Zone, Zod got defeated fairly easily. I don't know. Maybe he just kind of charged in and wasn't using his strategy or tactics that he's known for. And once he's defeated, it's like, all right, so now what? Are they, is Zod going to find a way out of the Phantom Zone? What are they going to do to Zod? So yeah, there's still a lot of answers. If anything, mm-hmm. this storyline, this Unity saga, almost raised more questions about Zod than we previously had and didn't answer. I can't think of anything that got answered. Still don't know his motivation, still don't know where he came from, still don't know, did he really have anything to do with the destruction of Krypton? And on top of all that, we've got more questions like, will Zar really work with the Kryptonian criminals in the Phantom Zone, or will he eventually wipe them out? How did Zod find out? What is the extent of Zod's knowledge of Rogelzar's role in the destruction of Krypton? So yeah, and in typical Bendis fashion, more questions than answers. And I think after the Man of Steel miniseries, when we saw, oh, Superman gets pulled into the Phantom Zone along with the rest of the Earth, well, Bendis must want to tell more Zar story. Maybe he wants to give us the answers that we need. And it was all sort of a big tease in a way. But I suppose we'll get there when Bendis is good and ready.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I'm just... You're right. It is a little annoying that there are, like, no answers here. But I am more willing to wait than most readers, I guess, or just at least more excited by the anticipation.
Yeah. And it's not like I've needed it all spelled out, but it would have been nice to at least get
right, one or two answers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And exactly. Then raise more questions.
But the other thing I wonder about is, so how much of it is story that Bendis had planned out before even any of his first issues hit the stands, like before the first issue of Man of Steel. So in other words, he may have had all this planned out before he saw any fan reaction. And regardless of what a writer says in terms of, oh, I don't listen to, I just tell the story that I want to tell, and I don't listen to, you know, the reactions and how things are received. There's always a little bit of, okay, they're hating it, I need to change directions a little bit, or I, you know, based on what fans, oh, they're really responding to this, let me lean more into that part of the story or this part of the story. So you kind of wonder if this is still all his pre-planned stuff, or at some point the story itself is going to dictate to him, okay, organically, I'm going to change it, you know, or I'm going to tweak it and change it a little bit. And the other part of that is, even without fan reaction, until you see the finished work and, you know, you see the story on the comic page with the colors, with the letters, and see how it reads and comes across, you're going to, if you're a good comic writer, you're going to adjust in terms of what the tone and the mood of the story is as the finished product. So it may be that we start to see the story that Bendis is telling evolve in a way. And I think as a reader, what we see that as the story not necessarily evolving, but unfolding, I guess you would say. So again, I have no idea how much of this was still Bendis's like pre-plan. And how much of the story that's starting to unfold is him starting to let the story speak to him. So I imagine at some point the story itself is going to dictate, okay, now it's time to give the answers. Now it's time to tell the story of John in space with his grandfather and all that kind of stuff. So pacing's always the toughest thing to get right, I think, for a writer in comics. And Bendis mm-hmm. has always been one that writes at a slower pace. And so I still don't fully trust him on Superman. This is the bottom line. So Action Comics seems like it's moving along at a quicker pace than Superman. So maybe that's my issue. They're two stories being told at a different pace, and that can be okay. But it certainly explains why these two Bendis written Superman titles are not tied together like we talked about in the past, or they could be, where it's basically you read an issue of Action, then you go and read an issue of Superman for the continuation of that story. These are two completely separate stories at this point, which is interesting considering they're being written by the same writer.
Which, again, I think we talked about this before, but I like when things are separate. And even with that in mind, though, if we want to talk about Supergirl that came out this week, too, I like how that's separate, but still slightly tied in with it and did give us a little bit of answer.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I think that's actually probably what we'll talk about on the next episode. We'll break down that Supergirl issue. The thing I would say about them being separate, you could look at it one of two ways. Like this, so this is a monthly book, and before Bendis came on, both these titles came out every 2 weeks. So you were getting the story twice as fast. If we were going where the story continued between Action and Superman, and then went back and Action Superman, we would get the story, we'd get one of these stories twice as fast. Because it would be, again, coming out twice a month. But we'd only get one of these stories. And I do want both of these stories. So I'm okay with them being separate. I mean, I think part of the reason I love the Triangle era so much wasn't because all the Superman books were tied in so closely. It just meant the story came faster because you basically got a weekly Superman story. But it was kind of sprawling and, it had its own... It has its own inherent weaknesses because of the way that the story was being told. So, yeah, I'm totally fine with this in terms of them being separate. Again, I just hope the pacing in the Superman title picks up a little bit. And I have a feeling it will, because I do have a feeling that the first arc of the Superman title, this Unity Saga, he probably already had it completely planned out to a T, knew exactly how many issues it was going to be, how much he was going to reveal or not reveal, whatever the case might be. So I think now that we're moving on to the second arc, we're going to start seeing issues that were written once his Man of Steel series was already on stands and he had an idea of how it was being received, basically. As far as the art in this issue, kind of talked about it with the splash pages. Adams has said before how Ivan Reis is becoming his favorite Superman artist. He does a great job in this issue. The splash pages, as much as I'm not sure if it was the best way to tell this story, there's no argument that the art is really spectacular. It shows kind of the grand scope of this fight, just how epic it is, because all three of these beings, Zod, Zar, and Superman, are all, extremely powerful. So I have absolutely no complaints about the art, from the pencils to the inks. Amazing color work by Alex Sinclair. He really gets to shine as well in these splash pages, because a lot of the background stuff is space and the flames and such are all him. That's all added after with color. So he's really showing his chops. The more traditional second half of the book, the thing that really shines through for me in the art is the emotionality of it. I talked specifically about the one panel where the look on Superman's face when he realizes he's got to let that go, the fact that he can't go back to the Phantom Zone and he's got to stay and help Earth. And then, of course, that final page reveal of John. I mean, there's also some scenes where Superman is being cheered by the citizens of Earth because he's been helping with these incidents that are after effects of the Phantom Zone incident. And we even see at one point some guys are taking a selfie with them, and You can tell he's pleased and happy, but that his mind is still elsewhere. He's still thinking about Czar and wanting to get answers. So I think another home run from the art team for sure. What do you say, Adam?
Yeah, definitely agree. I think, you know, I like the splash pages. I think Reese is kind of the king of splash pages at this point. I think my impression here is that, you know, action seems for Bendis, like he's writing Superman for himself, and Superman is Bendis writing for his art team, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Yep, home run for sure. All right, well, I think that's going to do it for this episode. I want to remind everybody about our 12 Days of the Comic Source giveaway. The book we're going to give away for this episode is... Let me look it up here really quick. Who might I see? Oh, it's Superman Batman Volume 1 trade paperback. It has some Ed McGuinness and also some Michael Turner art. So... link in the show notes to the rules, how to win, just real quickly. Basically, what you want to do is you're going to want to retweet the tweet that announces this episode on Twitter with the hashtag 12 Days of the Comic Source. You also need to send the Comic Source Twitter account a direct message with the secret code word so I know that you listened to this episode. And I think the secret code word for this issue is going to be Superboy Returns. So everyone who direct messages me the secret code word and retweets this tweet will be eligible to win. And again, all the winners will be announced on New Year's Eve. So coming up real soon. Adam and I thank everybody for listening. As always, please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.